now all of you came together, and you pulled together an even bigger meeting, got an even bigger meeting. I mean, we could get a real mass-based political movement in Montreal. People are not adverse to this type of political discussion. It has to be, you have to have a more long-term perspective. Once you get 1,000 people in the room, what the hell are you going to say to them?
Just as a follow-up, I guess what I was trying to point at was the importance that, you know, for the reforms that we're talking about, I agree you can't just try to fix the symptoms, you have to go to the root cause, you know, it's the big root cause. But in order to have any real change, you need mainstream involvement, you know, you need the people to actually agree with it, you need to get elected, you know, you have to have the policies that go into the action. And, you know, that takes like a catalyst, you know, it takes some reason for people to actually agree for it to go through. And it either it could be a series of accomplishments towards the bigger thing that you can point at and say these are what are working, this is how we should do it, or it's going to be the cataclysmic failure that we're all afraid of, that people are going to be lying in the streets, you know, homeless and unemployed.
Yeah, right.
So that's my concern, is, you know, what kind of small accomplishments that can be built up that more people will be
people
willing
see
to
that coming.
Get involved.
People see that coming. Yeah. And what we're doing with these videos, putting them on our website, get this mass information out about precisely how this has happened in the past, but within a political movement. You know, it's not some MySpace page that gives out 9/11 facts or something. But we are actually trying to do something to stop this. We have a policy solution. And I don't think people necessarily want to just wait for the sky to fall. It's funny, right? Because all the young people you talk to, no shit's fucked up. They, in Canada especially, they know why. They know all kinds of different conspiracy theories. Some pick and choose which ones they want, which ones they like. They're all really informed about what's going on, but yet each one of them says, I can't do anything. What the hell? If they just change that one little aspect, they continued a certain curious drive, but yet came together in a way which was led by reason. It wasn't just like some bunch of angry mob being enraged about the man of the system. There was actually a real intellectual fight to understand this. What can we put in its place? How can we lead this situation to better resolve? Once that is your underlying assumption that that's possible, then this stuff will rather organically evolve. But that, it has to change at that level. You can't just change aspects of a parliamentary system and scrap the whole thing. You can't change aspects of globalization. Because the problem lies in the approach, method, the axioms that are underlying it, that govern it. So, you know, if you like that system, and like what that system gives you as a consumer, then that's compromising, you know. You have to make a decision, okay, do I fight that system and all that it entails, and everything I hate about it, and everything I enjoy about it, or do you make compromise? Say, well, I'll give this kid in Africa $100 because they need it more than me. When you know full well their children are inheriting the same problem.
What we do have is the worst forecasts. And this guy is the most successful economic forecaster in history. And meanwhile, you've got Alan Greenspan, who gets on National Public Radio over the holidays and admits that he's been totally incompetent his entire life. I mean, like, this is the supposedly the most influential banker in the world saying that he and his colleagues as a sector are totally incompetent and really can't tell you anything legitimate about where the economy is going. But you've got this guy, LaRouche, who's been blacked out because he's good over the last 50, 60 years. making a series of forecasts, not based on predicting specific events, but forecasting certain directions that the economy can go in, certain upcoming crises which could erupt, and then posing solutions to those. Like, one famous one is that in 1988, he went to a hotel, the Kempinski Hotel in Germany, and at a press conference told the world that the Berlin Wall was about to come down in the coming months, and that we had to be prepared for the reunification of Germany. In 1983, he had forecast within about 5 years that the Soviet system would collapse. And he's been making forecasts like that his entire life. Now, everybody in the Congress knows that. Everybody on Wall Street knows that. So, and around the world, leading figures. So the legitimacy is there. The role of leadership is there that LaRouche has provided. It's unfortunate that for much of the last 50 years, the leadership of Western civilization has willfully ignored what LaRouche has been telling them. And we're now at the point, like Bruce said, where these guys have managed to break their own system, to destroy their own system. So when we take that and LaRouche's record and his leadership over this entire span, with what our youth movement is doing now to inspire the population, because our generation does have the capacity, much more easily than the boomers, to become inspired by ideas. You know, things will be taken up over the rest of the weekend. You know, some more aspects of history, of the work we're doing in science right now, to create a new renaissance in culture. You know, think about this guy Nicholas of Cusa, who organized the Renaissance, living in a dark age, or other individuals in history who themselves lived in dark ages. And think of how these guys, through the strength of their own character, managed to elevate themselves out of a shitty situation, totally backwards culture, superstitious, doing all kinds of crazy things. Like during Cusa's time, you had these guys named the Flagellants, these groups roaming around Europe, whipping themselves during the plague, because they thought if they whipped themselves, God would stop punishing them.
Still going on in Pakistan and India and Russia.
Yeah, but then they decide, well, why whip ourselves when we can whip the Jews? And they started going after Jews and other minorities in the villages, and they thought that was a better policy. But that kind of insanity, right? And don't you see that on the streets and everything these days? I mean, or in the clubs or wherever.
Well, it's heavy metal music.
Yeah.
It's like sadomasochistic.
Man. But the point being is we can elevate ourselves out of that. And we can do it because we can have a vision of the future. And we still have within us the seed of when we're kids and we look up at the stars and we wonder what's out there. And you notice this with kids, this innate curiosity to figure out why things are happening and how things work. And then you get to university, and by the time somebody gets to university, man.
Forget the stars.
Forget the stars. They're just nose to the grindstone. They're ready to become the debt slave that they were intended to be. But we can break ourselves out of that. isn't that the direction that our lives are supposed to take within the system? Why would you want to go along with that? I mean, that's a pretty dismal future. But because we have this quality and we're still young and we can look forward into the next 50 to 75 years, we can find that strength and say, look, why do we have to put up with this bullshit culture? Let's actually create something and perpetuate that into the future and take that concept and take that out to the streets and organize other youth. And look at something probably Pascal is going to be going into tomorrow. Does anybody here want to guess what the average age was for the leadership of the American Revolution? 45?
45.
2? Yeah, super young. the Marquis de Lafayette was 19 when he came over and became a general in the Continental Army. Alexander Hamilton was barely out of his teenage years.
But they weren't living as long as today.
Well, Benjamin Franklin was in his 70s. He kind of pulls the average up. But these were the youth. Yeah, it was Benjamin Franklin's youth movement. So don't underestimate the capacity we have to transform society.
Yeah. Because in response just to your question, the way it was posed, it would be hard to recruit a youth movement. It would be hard to recruit a seriously potent political movement on the basis of, like, crushing Michael Bloomberg, who's, you know, he's a schmutz. That's like half a year. You know, the campaigns are in, the elections in November. One way or another, will, you know, it's not like, okay, see you later, right? But the fact is, you know, what it really means when you look at this, the whole scope of human history. And I know that Bruce would have gotten into some of these more philosophical questions if he had been here. What is the nature of mankind? What is the path that we're on as humanity? And it makes a lot of sense when you look at it from that perspective to learn about and get really excited about these great projects and building the kind of infrastructure that would change the relationships between cultures. We would never have to go back to empire, globalization, feudalism. Our generation could be responsible for establishing this community of nation states from which, you know, a retrogression or a reversion to this kind of world empire controlled through financial schemes and ideology would be next to impossible. So, I mean, if we looked at that as the job to do, then, yeah, because I'm thinking in terms of the way that Bruce answered my last question.
Okay.
So, you know, thinking about it the right way, you know, because the fascists are never going to stop trying to suppress the upward development of mankind. They're not going to stop trying to suppress the expansion of the American system, what the United States represents, as long as they exist. So our job is to run out of business. Yeah. And it can be done. We can. The financial system is gone. Financial oligarchy is powerless. The only power they have right now is the fact that our Congress believes in free trade. And they don't even know that it's their job to promote the general welfare instead of to protect the free market. That's the only power the financial oligarchy has now. That the baby boomers are cracked up.
What about this state legislator, was it?
Yeah.
Up in the Northeast?
Kandorski?
No, not Kandorski. Some other guy. We challenged him. We asked him, isn't your job to defend the general welfare instead of, I don't know, the banking system or whatever it was?
The market.
And he said, where does it say... Where does it say that? In the Constitution. Where in the Constitution? In the preamble. And this is an actual exchange. An elected official in the United States didn't even realize what the preamble of his own Constitution said, and that was actually his job description. These are the baby boomers, so, yeah. I mean, and you see that once you go into the Congress and you talk to people, and or you go to the Parliament here and talk to these guys, and man, it's a jump didn't seem so hard.
So
Congress
the
is
other,
like high
school. The other thing too is that it's not, it's really not that hard to, like, it's not, it's all outlined for us. You know, Roosevelt set a good example. If you just look at the way that he implemented the reorganization, it's, we just have to take his lead. We could do, we can actually do this. We can actually overthrow this entire system of globalization. Like, if you look at it, you can actually say that the odds are on our side for that because of the fact that the whole system of globalization is collapsing right now. You know, that, in a sense, is opening the door for us now to come in and implement the new architecture of the financial system. So all we got to do, like my answer, I guess, to your question would be, you know, to start now, this weekend, working with us on these ideas and really getting a concrete understanding of what Lynn is proposing. Because it really is through, like, you know, Miles said, we can pull in people. We can go out on the streets and we can get people mobilized. But we have to have a certain, we have to assert the leadership ourselves and have a certain, a very clear understanding of what it is that we're proposing to people. What it is that we're proposing when we call Parliament, who, by the way, right now are like running around like chickens without a head. You know, they keep running.
With the head cut off.
Yeah. They really don't know what to do about this crisis. Everybody knows there's a crisis right now. They don't know what to do. It's very clear. And so they need our leadership, right? Because this whole thing can go either way. You know,
yeah,
we're not...
I was just going to say, in a parliamentary system, you know, their first reaction is just to collapse the government. That's this is a crisis. Okay, well, let's get rid of the government.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we just... This is our time. This is our opportunity now. You know, let's just make sure we don't lose it. Like, we can actually get this thing done. It's not some euphoric, you know, utopic idea that wouldn't it be nice to overthrow globalization. Globalization is collapsing as a system. The only way they can keep it going is if they implement fascism. It's the only way. So they're going to go for that because they don't want to let it go. They're going to go for it. It's very clear. We're following the situation. We should follow it, too. And so we just got to make sure that they can't do it. You know, like Bruce said, we got to outflank them. Be on our toes and really just develop ourselves, develop an understanding of not only how to deal with this, but of how to be real statesmen. You know, like... some of the best statesmen in history were scientists and classically trained musicians, artists. You know, and that's really what the weekend's about. I'd say the first step would be to commit to this weekend and to take part in developing these ideas in history, economics, science, astronomy, and music. And then to take it out into the culture and organize our entire generation around these ideas that are going to be necessary to overthrow this system.
Sorry. It's my first time here. And I don't know everybody. Who's the organizing?
You want us to begin raise our hands?
I organize.
Am I the only one doing
it? No.
Okay. Because I listened to a guy there, and sorry, I don't remember his name. Ben, il semblait vraiment très bien informé, mais moi, il me semble que j'ai beaucoup de questions. Tu sais, c'est quand même I just do questions. Mais bon, on a dit ça, je me gêne. T'as pas eu le goût de prendre le micro et faire les monologues. En fait, c'est comme. Le nucléaire. Moi, j'ai trouvé ça un petit peu bizarre parce que la promotion du nucléaire. Parce que le nucléaire, premièrement, c'est une ressource. Limité. Il n'y en a pas beaucoup. C'est sûr que si tu fais de la.
L'uranium, c'est
bon? Oui, effectivement. L'uranium, il n'y a pas des gisements énormes. Les réserves sont plutôt limitées. L'idée de faire un baril marqué au descendant, il ne va pas ouvrir avant 4 milliards d'années. Tu sais.
C'est pour ça qu'il a parlé de la fusion.
Oui, mais la fusion, elle est loin, loin.
Non, pas si loin que ça.
Non, mais je veux dire, ils ont réussi à monter à je ne sais pas combien de centaines de millions de degrés, mais ça prend des milliers ou des dizaines de milliers de degrés. Je veux dire, oui, c'est chaud, mais c'est comme. C'est tellement loin de ce qu'on peut faire. De tellement loin de ce qu'on a de besoin. Puis en plus, c'est que tu fais ça avec des lasers. Mais un laser a un rendement d'à peu près 1%, 2%, 3%. Fait que ça va te prendre quasiment une bombe atomique pour alimenter ton laser.
Non, non, c'est
pour
pas
arriver.
Vrai. Pas avec
ils sont très loin. Très
oui,
loin.
Ils sont loin,
pour
mais.
Pour chauffer, c'est un laser. Un laser a un rendement très faible.
Mais ils sont même pas. Ils sont pas si loin que ça. Mais
même si c'était à
10%. Oui, mais c'est pas ça la question. La question, c'est qu'on sait qu'on a le potentiel de découvrir. Le problème, c'est que depuis 40 ans, peut-être un peu moins, mais depuis un bon certain temps, quand Bruce parlait justement de qu'est-ce qui est arrivé aux 68 ans, l'idée de la génération
aux
des 68
ans. Les gens qui étaient adultes à l'âge de 1968.
Okay.
En ce moment, on est gouverné par des gens qui ne veulent pas de science. On est gouverné par des gens qui sont contre la science. C'est ça le problème en ce moment qui est vraiment en train de le ramasser dans le fond par terre.
Ben, je ne sais pas, mais à chaque fois qu'ils font un projet, ça leur prend un engineering à te passer. Je veux dire, on a juste fait le métro, ça a coûté 110 millions d'engineering, ce qui n'était pas des pilotes.
Ouais,
ils sont trompés d'un kilomètre sur 100. C'était quand même pas si mal.
Oui, mais le problème, c'est qu'est-ce qu'on veut pour le futur? Parce qu'en ce moment, ce qui se passe, les gens qui ont arrêté le développement du nucléaire dans les dernières années, l'idée, c'est quoi? D'où ça vient? Puis quand il parlait du mouvement environnementaliste aussi, poser des questions là-dessus, sur qu'est-ce qui, en fait, est en train de diriger l'opinion populaire, la population en ce moment, comment on pense manière qui nous a mis ça dans la tête à un certain point. Parce que c'est pas normal de penser à juste mettre des oignons partout il y a 40 ans. Mais on bâtissait la manique, c'est pas la même intention. Mais de passer d'une révolution tranquille à passer à une révolution partout.
Ouais.
C'est un gros step.
C'est comme à un moment donné, il parle puis il dit. Je ne veux pas tuer personne. C'est moi, je pense pas que si je décide de mettre une fenêtre du côté sud, ça va menacer la vie de personne.
Non, c'est pas ça le point. L'énergie solaire, c'est bon dans une place qui a plein de vent, qui a plein de soleil. L'énergie éolienne, c'est bon où est-ce qu'il y a plein de vent. Okay? Mais c'est pas assez pour promouvoir de l'énergie à une population de 6 millions de milliards de personnes qui
plus. Ben, c'est parce que, regarde, tu vois, en ce moment, là, on fait des calculs, OK? On juste une toiture de maison ordinaire, OK? La moyenne au Québec. La moyenne, elle reçoit 6 fois l'énergie qu'elle consomme dans la flamme. C'est quand même pas si mal. Puis, bon, OK, c'est vrai qu'en soit plus l'été, bon, l'hiver. Et même l'hiver, tu en reçois deux fois plus. C'est là. Plus ça le prend. Pas besoin de faire la fission.
Oui, mais pour n'importe quelle technologie solaire, ça va te prendre un produit fabriqué.
Mm-hmm. Ben, il y en a plein.
Mais ces produits fabriqués-là, ils vont être fabriqués avec d'énergie solaire?
Il y a différentes façons de fabriquer des produits.
Parce que la question, c'est que quand tu deals avec la conception énergétique d'une maison,
mm-hmm.
puis après ça, tu passes à la conception d'une aluminerie, comme on a au Québec,
mm-hmm.
on ne parle pas exactement à la même ordre de grandeur d'énergie.
Non, effectivement.
Puis ça devient le genre d'investissement qu'on a besoin pour soutenir une population grandissante comme la nôtre de plus de 6,5 milliards de personnes, c'est au-delà de toute l'énergie même si tu pourrais accumuler toute l'énergie solaire.
C'est 20 000 fois ce qu'on consomme.
Mais si
même si en énergie solaire, 20 000 fois.
Mais c'est ça la question de la science.
Le top de ce qu'on consomme aujourd'hui.
Mm-hmm.
On souhaite 20 000 fois plus de soleil.
Mais notre population, elle va grandir de façon géométrique.
Géométrique, ça veut dire quoi ça? Ça veut dire exponentielle.
Mm-hmm. Oui.
Okay.
Donc, même si on décidait d'investir les prochains 30-50 ans comme assez d'assurer de tout mettre en utilisation l'énergie nucléaire.
Ouais, mais tu sais, regarde, il y a des choses que je trouve un petit peu complètement débiles. Tu sais, comme expliquait là, mettons l'Angleterre a exporté 100 000 litres de lait exporté. Il l'a importé. Je veux dire, on va peut-être se mettre à bâtir des centrales pour l'exporter deux fois, l'importer, mais je veux dire.
Mais là,
l'idée, ce serait juste de ne pas le déplacer, de le consommer localement.
Et là, on change la conversation. Là.
Non, parce qu'on parle d'énergie. Moi, je te dis, on pourrait peut-être. Il y a des choses qui sont complètement abrutissantes qu'on fait avec l'énergie.
Je suis certain qu'on pourrait trouver un million d'exemples.
Mm-hmm.
Mais il faut comprendre ça dans le sens plus large.
Qui est?
Ce que Luc okay. présentait, moi, c'est le point qui est bon, parce que l'idée de densité énergétique, le flux de densité énergétique, en fait.
Hey, Pascal?
Oui.
Sorry. Can you speak English?
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, I can. The energy flux density that you get from nuclear power, from fission, from fusion, well, it outnumbers like billions of times.
Oh, it's okay.
Can cover the earth with solar panels and windmills. It's never going to get close to what nuclear can do. The question is, how do we sustain the population?
Mais aussi, c'est que le nucléaire, vous le présentez comme s'il était infini. Mais pour l'instant, techniquement, ce qu'on a, c'est loin d'être infini.
That's the best we have. And that's the last thing we're going to get. We can go to hydrogen.
There's also some considerations to that. This, because the reasons for not going with nuclear, one of them is the waste, like you mentioned, right?
Chernobyl aussi.
Well, Chernobyl,
ils ont parlé de, à un moment donné, d'évacuer l'Europe.
Chernobyl and Three Mile Island, there's a lot of intensive propaganda around this, and you can look at why that meltdown happened and compare the standards for how that happened and look at how plants are run today. I mean, look, I could kill myself with a spoon or with a toothpick if I really tried. Yeah, I could just hold my breath. I mean, so That I don't think that's really the issue. We should learn from that. I mean, if we were going to use that reasoning,
people are not going to drive cars or flying. They're not even going to leave their homes. And they're going to stay in bed. But then again, they could probably suffocate themselves in the sheets. So even that, but... it's a concern, obviously. We don't want to have nuclear meltdowns. But that's something that's been taken care of. And there's a reason that's always promoted by the environmentalists. And what they don't tell you about are the kind of reactors that are now being developed by South Africa and other countries, what are known as fourth generation reactors, which are literally foolproof, which usually we say is we hear something's foolproof and that's the warning bells start ringing.
Yeah, well, I'm going to get technology. So you know, you think it's foolproof, and the people who are embarked in this study think that it's foolproof. But they think that it's foolproof, and you see where it explodes. So they say, well, but here, the others, you have to pay attention when you think that technology is foolproof. Parce que justement, ça peut ne pas l'être, puis ça me pète dans la face que l'on se voit pas.
D'ailleurs, le nucléaire, c'est un plein de promesses.
Ouais,
c'est
vraiment la moins foolproof de toute la
game.
Si on check avec les éoliennes et tout le reste, c'est la moins foolproof de toute la game, c'est sûr.
J'ai
compris pas.
Nothing's foolproof?
No, I'm saying that of all the energy sources, nuclear is the most dangerous, that's for sure. Others are safer.
Fire was dangerous once.
Yeah.
Very dangerous.
But we can deal with that. When you look at the waste is not an issue. The only way that stuff is waste is if we bury it in the ground. What we should do, it's actually a resource. Because the fuel can be recycled and reprocessed. And we have all of those technologies. This is why one of the problems that the U.S. and Britain have with...
Je sais que pour l'instant, la seule façon de leur recycler, c'est au but perforé. Et puis c'est les obus perforés, c'est ça?
I don't know if, like, when we were in Ottawa, there was, like, one guy who talked about how to recycle it. I don't know if you can, like, talk about it, because I don't really remember.
Yeah, with nuclear fuel, what you have in a nuclear bomb is 95% enriched uranium. And you have two kinds of uranium, uranium-235 and uranium-238. Which one is the... Yeah.
235?
No, 235. 235? Okay. In our CANDU reactors in Canada, out of all the uranium in the reactor, 0.7% is fissionable uranium-235. The rest of it is U-238. In a nuclear bomb, you have 95%. The reason the U.S. has all kinds of waste is because they made bombs. Now, we can use that waste in order to create new fuel, which is something that is starting to happen. Same thing, Russia has to do that a lot also. But we'll get rid of all of this high-grade plutonium and everything else, but we're going to burn it, creating power to desalinate water in the third world, seawater, to create all kinds of power required for reindustrializing our countries. The problem is that nuclear power has been turned into an ideological question as opposed to a scientific, economical question. Most of the fear factor is easily dealt with under normal conditions. Canada has operated nuclear power for decades, and there's never been a serious issue. There's one event in Chalk River, apparently, a few decades ago, which is hyped up into a big thing, but was really not a big thing, because there are safety measures in place to deal with this. If you took all of the waste in Canada right now from producing... Ontario produces, I think, half of its power from nuclear. We have 18 or 20 reactors across the country. If you took all of the waste that's been created by over 50 years of nuclear power in Canada, it fills 5 hockey rinks up to the boards. So over 50 years. And when they want to, they can take that waste and reprocess it into more fuel again in the future. But right now, because the waste is so little, they don't have to do that yet. So these questions are all being dealt with. And if we recycle the fuel, we have enough current resources for nuclear power to last several thousand years.
And where aren't we?
Well, why do we have this oligarchy? Why is the economic system disintegrating? Why do we have fascism being imposed around the world? In many of LaRouche's documents, he talks about Prometheus. This play Prometheus Bound by Aeschylus. It's very famous, one of the most important of the Greek tragedians. And it's very clear in this play. See, Prometheus is a titan, and he's given fire to mankind. You know, Zeus, this great oligarch, this tyrant sitting on Mount Olympus throwing thunderbolts around and screwing everybody in sight, including boys and, you know, the whole... I mean, nobody was really free from his clutches if he got turned on. You know, so this is the oligarch Zeus, and he has humanity in total squalor, rolling around in the muck, living in caves, in total ignorance. And for him, humanity is there for his pleasure. He can use them, he can do whatever he wants with them. What Prometheus does is he brings fire to mankind. And he says explicitly in the play, he says, I gave them culture, I gave them science, knowledge, the arts, everything that they have, which forms a civilization, I gave to them. Now, what did Zeus do to Prometheus? He chained him to a mountain for eternity. And every day, Zeus's eagle would come and eat Prometheus's liver. Now, Aeschylus is talking about this 2,400 years ago. Or actually more, almost 2,500 years ago. And LaRouche references this because this is what you could call an invariant characteristic of oligarchic society, any empire, is to deny people the right to fire, to progress. And this is what you see with nuclear power today. Nuclear power today is of that quality of transforming society and the potential of humanity on the planet to develop. And that's why it's denied. That's why we haven't implemented the full uranium cycle.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, if you have machines that are capable of not producing any waste, and you can keep on running for like quite a long time or whatever, I don't see why you couldn't like use other energy anyway. You know what I mean?
We'll use a whole range.
Because he was saying that you would kill somebody if you go for these energy. Nobody died from solar energy.
I think he said if you're going for the climate change, what Al Gore is saying is like, without knowing, you're supporting a policy which will kill millions of people on this earth.
With solar energy?
The people who are are duped into believing what Al Gore is saying right now.
That global warming is, if there is any, it is man-caused. It's man-made.
What was the question?
In other words, industrialization.
It's true.
Yeah.
I agree.
That global warming, first of all, if there is any,
yeah,
it's man-made.
That's what
it's a result of our progress.
But
this is what Al Gore is. This is what he's done.
That's a lie.
His claim is that men are causing this.
But that's,
and
it's
proposed.
On this question, I would pose your question a different way. That it's not have people died because of solar panels, but how many people have died because they didn't have access to technology development?
Well, actually,
and that may be
a lot of
potentially
in
the billions.
Are you using solar panels?
What did you say?
A lot of people died recently.
They didn't have a lot of things.
No, what I'm saying is
I mean the question can be turned around.
Well, we can. Yeah, we can discuss
how much
right.
people in the war is.
Because I think it saved more people than killed people, honestly.
What is it that makes technology so evil, or the use of technology evil? It's not technology.
I
agree.
Sure,
it has
no
to be
technology. But actually, it's like China is using a lot of solar panels. Actually, they're developing like all the area like where they have like.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Using
it's just
solar
not
energy,
sufficient.
There you the whole village is
okay, yeah.
self-support.
There's nothing really bad with solar panels. It's just it's not sufficient for what we need.
Yeah.
On its own, it doesn't stand alone.
Yeah, but there's another question that the guys seem to think it's absolutely stupid about reducing our consumption. I think that we need that much energy for everybody on the earth to live like we do. But I think that if we consumption, we can have something better without the use of nuclear energy and everything.
Well, what do we
I
want to consume?
Huh?
What do we want to
well,
consume?
I mean, people are speaking against the culture in which we are living. It's a culture of consumption. The consumers
yeah,
give you an
sure.
example.
So if you want to change the culture, the culture, I think that we will reduce our consumption. So,
oh, it's funny. It's a funny paradox. You see, that's why I asked the question.
Mm-hmm.
But the answer he gave was not in. It didn't have to do with like physical things that we consume, right? Like. In other words, when LaRouche says that actually the solution to this whole thing is not to reduce consumption, but actually to increase consumption. And I had trouble understanding that for a long time. But he's not talking about increasing our consumption of like goods, necessarily. What Bruce presented is that it's going to be an increase in the highly developed sources of technology, like the density of technology used. And so, for example, right, moving from a fission-based towards a fusion-based economy, where we can actually provide raw material for people around the world, and relieve ourselves of this resource. Problem, the scarcity of resources, that would be increasing our consumption level. We'd be at least that's the way I'm understanding it right now, is that you're moving from a certain amount of energy being used in a system, in an economy, and you're actually elevating that to higher levels of energy consumption, meaning fusion, for example, because with those higher levels of energy, that's where you can generate the things that we need to provide for people, like resources.
Water.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does that kind of make sense? Like, the increase in consumption is not in your physical goods that you're going to start consuming.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
It's a big difference, because we are, like, a really materialist culture. That's something we probably do want to get away from.
Yeah, in fact, I guess the solution that the guy supposed is that by having more energy, we can produce more for other people that don't have anything.
That's another part of it, yeah.
Sure, but also
but I think
for all of humanity. It's not just third world that's going to be hitting a resource problem. It's the whole world.
I think first the third world doesn't have that much resource because we take the resource there. It's our fault. So I think if we leave the resource there,
here in a discussion.
Hold on.
I think that if we leave them their resources, they will have some, and we will reduce our level consumption to an acceptable one. And it's possible. I mean,
we will end our excess.
Yeah.
We'll end our excess. You know, there's a level of consumption which is very excessive here.
Yeah.
And
I
become more moderate.
Yeah.
Modest.
Yeah, a couple considerations on that. We don't want to be consuming more child-made clothes and shit that falls apart a year. Like, were you here for the part on houses? When Bruce talks about these tar paper shacks?
Yeah.
The mortgage is 30 years and the house falls down in 20? It's a bad way to run an economy.
Yeah, sure.
Or talk to our parents about how long a fridge would last or a washing machine if they bought it 30 years. Actually, probably most houses might still have that 30-year-old fridge. And in the basement, the beer fridge, they've gone through four.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's an increase in quality. Now, consider also in this, building a transcontinental double-track high-speed rail system and eventually a magnetic levitation system going from Quebec City to Windsor. Now, that is included in consumption. Because if you think about consumption in the following way, take a basket of goods. You know, when we get into power and we start reorganizing this thing, we're going to sit down, a bunch of physical economists around a table, and we're going to say, all right, what do people need to consume in order to survive? Okay, how much food does an average person need? Transportation, housing, all this kind of stuff. And you can assemble that and look at what is actually required. Now, most of that is not what we have today. In fact, we've been under-consuming infrastructure for 40 years. The infrastructure in our country has been collapsing. We haven't been investing in it. And we now have maybe, just to replace and maintain what we currently have in the country, is going to cost Canada $500 billion in the next decade, 10, 15 years. So what we need to focus on is building that. Now imagine a high-speed rail system, which is moving all of these trucks off of the roads, which are not even very efficient means of transportation, and that these rail systems are electrified. So you now have a higher quality of transportation, polluting far less, causing far less destruction to our roads, moving people faster. I mean, that's a major improvement in our economy. And that's how we're talking about consumption. It's not about how much more beer we're
I missed something.
We're going to consume the infrastructure in the last 40 years.
Oh, okay, d'accord.
Yeah, we haven't maintained it.
Yeah.
Just look at the roads in Quebec.
Yeah, but I think that the guy had the point about how we bring the same resource from one point to another. And
yeah, that's very stupid.
Yeah. And in fact, there's a lot of
especially
food consumption there.
Well, that's the purpose.
Higher quality.
Yeah.
Fresher.
Yeah,
release,
I think that
so you don't move it around.
But that's one of the policies that's going to be destroyed with this system. That's one of the requirements of globalization, is increasing the amount of people working in trade and the decrease in the amount of people actually producing things. So you've got goods that end up traveling the world 3 or 4 or 5 times before they're actually used.
Travel.
The last city we built in North America was Las Vegas. That was in the 20s. We got this whole giant mass of undeveloped.
Oh, we got Dubai.
Developed area.
We got
think about more consumption, they think of suburban sprawl. Think about Walmarts and stuff like this. That was all set up around a real estate scam. We need cities, well organized, developed cities. You have plenty of wildlife to go explore in Canada. That's not an issue. We're not advocating massive suburban sprawl of the entire North America. We need more better organized cities and intercity transit. We need these cities to be centers of productivity, both scientific culture and textiles and products of these scientific ideas, technologies, high technology. Inner cities, that's what New York was. Mm-hmm. before Felix Robotins moved in, before Wall Street turned it into one big Fifth Avenue, one big mecca for billionaires.
That's what Montreal used to be.
Yeah. That's what we need to go back to. We need to go back to localized urban environments which are interconnected among and through nations and among and through themselves. City to city, downtown to downtown, maglev transport of both goods and passengers. It's a better way to organize society. This crap that Bruce was talking about, this privatized road that goes 14 miles, this will take you 4 hours to drive both ways each day.
It'll cost you
it costs you $10 a day. And you lose 4 hours out of your life. Every day. It's a terrible way to organize society. But that was organized as a financial swindle, as to use the gambling of mortgages and the child labor for Walmart to organize towns and to let these things grow and grow and grow. Nothing's built up, it's all built out. And it consumes farmland and it consumes all kinds of valuable resources. People bought into it because they said, hey, I can make money doing this. Buy and sell this house. I don't have to live with all the black people in Washington, D.C. Live out in the middle of nowhere. You gotta drive 2 hours to go 20 minutes. But, yeah, it's, you turn urban areas into centers with this deindustrialization policy. You turn urban areas into centers of drugs and poverty. And in America, this is causing new types of racial divisions. This is just manifesting a new problem. And the only way you're going to really fix that is by mass mobilizing and getting the solutions.
But I think that the resource problem is not about only about energy. It's about all kind of resource, about food and everything. And now we're the average human on this slide, on this world, which was part of La moyenne des gens sur la Terre présentement consomme beaucoup plus que ce qu'on devrait consommer. Puis les ressources sont en train de vraiment diminuer à une vitesse assez rapide, ce qui fait que dans à peu près une cinquantaine d'années, on n'aura plus grand-chose. Puis j'ai l'impression que même si on augmente la consommation, la quantité d'énergie qu'on produit, les ressources sont toujours pas là. Puis surtout, la technologie que vous parlez sur la fusion, en parlant d'arriver très rapidement, j'ai l'impression que c'est pas la solution qu'on peut prendre à court terme pour en venir au problème de manque de ressources. Moi aussi, ça, dans le fond, quand je parlais maintenant de consommation, c'était au niveau de ressources, du besoin de ressources. C'est, vous avez vraiment un point très fort sur le fait que tout ce qu'on achète brise au bout de 5 ans, puis que c'est complètement ridicule, mais je pense que quand même, on a un gros problème sur la consommation de ressources.
Qu'est-ce qui te fait dire, justement, qu'on consomme trop?
Ben, c'est
il y a des patoirs.
Ouais, non,
c'est
question de qu'est-ce qui fait dire qu'on consomme pas.
Bon, c'est plein d'études qui ont été faites, peut-être que vous n'avez pas aimé le terme ici sur l'empreinte énergétique. Que l'empreinte énergétique, elle dépasse beaucoup plus, par évitant la consommation, dépasse beaucoup plus que ce qu'on devrait avoir.
Okay.
Je peux vous expliquer pour ça.
Mais c'est un type de mesure. Okay. Nous, on en a un autre. Il y en a d'autres, sûrement. Donc, George Bush est ici. Parce que je voudrais m'assurer que les gens sont au courant que notre mouvement, c'est un mouvement d'idées, c'est-à-dire qu'on fait enquête sur un paquet d'idées pour voir s'ils sont bonnes ou s'ils sont pourries. Et je pense que c'est important parce que c'est toujours simple de regarder ce qui se passe à l'extérieur et de dire, par exemple, il y en a que c'est pas bon. Les gens sont brainwashed. Ils parlent toujours de la même chose, ils sont en baisse, ils n'ont pas d'allure. Donc, on vraiment question le comportement de la population, mais souvent, ici, c'est absolument ce qu'il faut faire, et c'est absolument ce qu'il faut faire pour faire un mouvement politique sérieux, c'est capable de vraiment remettre ses propres actions en considération. C'est vraiment des choses. Donc, puis c'est la même chose qu'on a fait sur le niveau de l'échauffement climatique, au niveau de l'économie, même. Paquet de gens ont dit que tout allait bien. Regardez les statistiques. PIB incroyable, 12 milliards de pourcents. Et la Roche qui n'arrête pas de parler depuis 30 ans que c'est une guerre de l'Ukraine. Donc il y a une question de mesure scientifique. Plus qu'il y a une nécessité de bien définir ce dont on parle et qui n'est pas propice à notre culture. Combien de gens aux États-Unis, par exemple, votent ou sont dans la bataille Clinton-Obama et sur les enjeux de. Un beau black en speedo, puis enfin une femme présidente. Alors que les enjeux qui vont décider de notre avenir ne sont pas discutés. Et dès qu'on les amène, ah ben là, c'est compliqué. Hey, des mecs trop de mots, l'école, quoi. Donc, genre, ça, c'est un très, très gros problème qu'on a parce que nous, pendant la fin de semaine, il y a tous les jours, on va essayer d'amener certaines idées assez tough. On a sorti plusieurs. Et c'est ça, moi je pense qu'il faut toujours garder un œil sur ce que nous on pense nous-mêmes, ce que chacun pense, et de vraiment vérifier ça peut-être pour une des premières fois. Je sais que moi, quand j'ai joué à ces trucs-là, où je me rappelle qu'à la roue je parlais par exemple du militaire, mais c'est une chose qui m'a choqué, je parlais du militaire, mais en regardant exactement ce qu'est le militaire, fais-tu par pas nécessairement apprécier plus le militaire, mais avoir une importance dans ça. Une étude, il y a un approfondissement à faire. Et ça, sachant que c'est pas particulier à notre culture, il faut vraiment regarder ça pas loin de notre œil. Ce que de dire, par exemple, le ecological footprint, ben, la Roche va parler de, justement de voir comment une économie ou comment une société faire vivre le plus de gens possible. C'est pas nécessité beaucoup de changements, c'est sûr. Mais pour justement voir si une société est efficace ou non, si une culture est efficace ou non. Et encore là, je pense que la question de science, mais de vraiment creuser comment nous-mêmes on pense, une question épistémologique comme tout ça. On adopte souvent des comportements ou des idées parce que nos amis trouvent que c'est cool. À la télé, on ne se rend pas compte qu'on se fait parler. On va garder ça en tête.
Non, je suis très d'accord là-dessus, mais n'empêche que j'ai dit, on était peut-être sur l'enfant que j'ai dit.
C'est ça, je pense que je.
C'est
moi ce qui m'intéresse, c'est plus la méthode, parce que c'est vraiment une question de méthode. Les raisons pour lesquelles on étudie Kepler. C'est que justement, à l'époque, dans un moment de l'histoire, il y avait trois systèmes différents pour expliquer le système solaire. Ben attends, il y en a un qui met la Terre au centre, d'autres qui met le Soleil au centre, d'autres qui met un pied d'affaires dans le désert. Ok, ben, lequel est le vrai? Ça me donne que c'est aucun des trois. Ça. Moi, je dis que Kepler, la façon dont il a découvert ça, c'est en travaillant par peu près, ça fait on parle d'une quinzaine d'années. De recherche, c'est des hypothèses sur vraiment comment les choses fonctionnent. C'est pas simplement un modèle proposé par une autorité qu'on peut avoir partout sur le monde. Parce que nous, quand on intervient, on se spécialise à remettre les autorités à leur place parce qu'on est les premiers à leur poser des questions. Et qu'est-ce que vous pouvez dire vraiment, monsieur, quand vous dites qu'il y a aucun avenir pour le changement?
Bon, vous savez,
c'est une sorte de réponse de baby boomer, pas de scientifique, pas d'expert. Ouais, et c'est ça qu'on comprend. Donc, je lance ça comme ça, un peu comme un challenge, parce que moi, c'est ce que j'ai été obligé de faire. Mais c'est sûr que sinon, en politique, c'est de manger mes rêves, parce qu'il y a tellement d'affaires. Donc, juste pour bien en temps, un groupe de gens qui veut changer les choses, au moins qui y pensent, tu sais. Tu prends dans une gang d'économistes. De PPP qui disent ah les syndicats les hôpitaux publics les vieux c'est pas cher, ils ont des listes de gros de rapports
sauf qu'il faut aussi quand tu as dit les bébés noirs genre qui sont pas des scientifiques alors que c'est pas vrai les bébés scientifiques les bébés noirs quand même c'est eux autres qui ont quand même fait avancer leur part de science en temps puis les autres sont pas nécessairement dépassés juste parce qu'ils sont des bébés noirs.
Donne-moi un exemple.
Faut juste faire attention.
Trois exemples.
C'est sûr que tu fouilles n'importe où. Genre,
les infrastructures qu'on a aujourd'hui,
il y en a des scientifiques là-dedans. C'est juste que j'écoute genre, les conférences du gars, puis souvent il y a des arguments qui revenaient qui associaient plein de groupes à des nazis. Genre.
Mm-hmm.
Puis ils disaient, ah, ça, eux autres, c'est des nazis, mais son argumentation finissait là. Genre, pour juste faire, en tout cas, je pense que c'est la partie la plus dure que je pouvais avaler. C'était le fait que ça finissait, ben, c'était des nazis, puis ils passaient à une autre affaire après, puis ils donnaient pas d'argument, ils disaient pas pourquoi.
Mm-hmm.
Puis il faut faire attention parce que les choses sont pas aussi noires et blanches que ça, sont pas si simples que ça.
Non,
tu peux pas brander quelqu'un de nazi et penser à autre chose. C'est pas aussi simple que ça. Si on parle de science, surtout, faut expliquer pourquoi ce serait des nazis. Puis, en fait,
il y a une recherche à faire. Je pense pas que Bruce peut faire toute la recherche de Longo. On a écrit beaucoup là-dessus.
Mm-hmm.
Il faut poser la question. Mais je pense que c'est des choses qu'il y a à creuser.
Mais je parle juste le fait de brander genre, les environnementalistes. Genre, je ne suis pas trop de fascistes. Attention, c'est faux. On parle vraiment dans le sens qu'on dit parce que c'est. Moi, il m'a perdu, là, cette phrase-là, tout de suite. C'était hard. En tout cas, c'est vraiment encore plus que j'ai entendu lui parce que cette argumentation-là, ça m'a pas.
Ok, mais c'est ça. Mais là, le point, c'est pas de dire, ben là j'en parle plus, mais c'est de dire, ok, ben qu'est-ce qu'il y a de vrai là-dedans? On peut revoir ça.
Ah, c'est ça. Je suis d'accord là-dessus, sauf que.
Ben.
Well, look, attends, I
wanted
to say something. About this because I feel like the discussion went far. There were some good points that were brought up on this question of culture, okay? And looking at the development of a scientific culture, but I think the question that you were asking was relevant, which was on this question of consumption. If I'm correct, you had understood from what we're discussing that our idea of increasing consumption is not increasing the consumption of materialistic goods, right?
Yeah.
But your concern arises when your concern arises on the question of natural resources,
yeah.
The depletion of natural resources. And so if I'm right, your idea was that in order to deal with that, it's not the consumption of goods necessarily that we have to reduce, it's the consumption of the natural resources. That's what you're saying,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. But the two are related. Yeah, the two are related. In a way, when everything we buy, we throw it away after 4 years,
yeah.
Well, not that I don't know it's related, but it's a loss of resources.
Well, I think that the confusion arises in the discussion should be on how we actually will generate these natural resources rather than cut back on consuming them. Because if you want to discuss how we're going to stop consuming them or reduce their consumption, then that's where we have to discuss what Bruce brought up, which he said put it straight on the table. If you want to engage in that discussion, then we have to talk about how we're going to reduce the population.
Yeah,
what part of the population you want to reduce first?
Yeah, okay, but the point I wanted to bring about this is that your solution about generating resources,
yeah,
is technologically based. I don't know.
Sure.
But when is the technology coming? Because our resource is going down.
Yeah.
So
well, that goes back to what JP was talking about,
yeah,
on the development of the scientific culture.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, and that's the work that we have to do right now.
And that's a political decision. Like John F. Kennedy, Matt's going to go through this, I believe, tomorrow. He made a political decision to go to the moon, not so we can get footprints on the moon, so that the national economy of the United States could reorganize around a mission like what Roosevelt did. Let's have fusion power as a mission for an international science. Give them more money, give them more equipment, give them more resources than they need.
They already have a lot of money.
No, NASA's
don't.
Been cut back.
Yeah,
massive.
We just shut down.
NASA,
yeah,
but
they've been giving
fusion
and
loads of money.
Fusion does not listen to what needs to be done.
The CEO made a decision overnight because she felt guilty somehow.
Yeah.
They're producing medical isotopes that they cure cancer patients with.
What are you saying?
Huh?
There's a nuclear reactor in the process of shutting it down.
Chalk River.
Yeah.
Mm.
Produces
yeah.
nearly half of the world's medical isotopes.
Mm.
Yeah.
And
they're
salt.
Getting cancer at the same time.
But I think,
and
you know, what Miles was
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, but the scanner,
yeah,
they said that it produces, I think it's 5-10% of the cancer. Maybe it's good to fight cancer, but it also creates cancer. And on top of that, cancer before wasn't such a big issue. It's only today that we have, like, so much cancer.
That's not because of nuclear power.
It's because of technology. No?
Well,
it's like these problems didn't exist before.
There were lepers.
You know?
There were lepers. The world was full of lepers and blind men. I mean,
people
diseases have been there.
Yeah. You had plague that took out
and
Europe.
I mean,
and
sorry,
you
it's like I went to school
point,
before
given.
And didn't see tons of kids allergic to nuts, peanut butter. It's like you want to scare kids in a kindergarten place? Bring out peanuts.
What's your scientific
Everybody
method?
Would go like,
How do you make it? How do you know what you're talking about?
I think everybody would agree that peanuts is the best way to scare young kids.
Peanuts.
A lot of them are
Who
allergic.
Would agree with you on
No, honestly, it's like you don't have kids. I don't have kids myself, but honestly, it's like a lot of people have allergic problems that weren't there before.
Why is that due to technology,
then? I want
to
say something.
But
where
it's,
do you
it's
think
it's
that
caused,
due to technology?
You become aware
from
of certain things.
Some something, you know, something popped it up. This
really?
Guy, for millions, enough, I mean, for thousands of years, we lived without an iPod.
The first time
with,
I came across my
own. Okay, first of all, okay, I understand what you're saying. But I I got j'ai une conférence, ok? D'un prof d'université à l'UQAM, puis lui expliquait qu'il avait découvert un sel qui permet de construire un ordinateur qui serait sécuritaire environnemental. Prendre cet ordinateur-là, le lancer dans la nature, il n'y a pas d'impact écologique. Des sols contaminés par le plomb, ça existe. Des sols contaminés par les PPC, ça existe. Je ne te dis pas, moi, de complètement dire « Ah non, moi, je ne marche plus, je vais sortir le boulier quand je veux faire des calculs. » Tu sais, non, c'est pas ça que je te dis. C'est que... C'est que je te dis, oui, la technologie qu'on a aujourd'hui a contribué à remplir les dépotoirs. Je trouve qu'aujourd'hui, ce que vous proposez, c'est technologie, technologie, technologie. Écoute, je suis technicien, ok? J'adore la technologie, mais je suis très conscient. Et puis, je suis très conscient que la technologie peut apporter quelque chose de très bien, même. Mais il y a beaucoup de choses qu'on nous présente aujourd'hui comme étant très merveilleuses, que je trouve qui sont vraiment pourrites.
Mm-hmm.
Fait que là, j'aimerais qu'on m'explique c'est quoi que j'ai dit qui était si drôle. Étant donné qu'on est ouvert à la
discussion. Il vient de Boston.
That's not
pas vraiment un issue.
OK.
Well, that's not like a... That shouldn't be really...
That's not the reason why we're laughing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
man. Mais anyway, ce que j'essayais de dire, c'est que finalement, il y a moyen de faire un iPod, il y a moyen de faire un ordinateur, il y a moyen de fabriquer toutes ces belles technologies-là qui, carrément, moi, en tout cas, je suis convaincu qu'ils empoisonnent l'environnement. Il y a moyen de les fabriquer de façon écologique. Je suis pas prêt à dire, je suis pas d'accord avec Larouche, quand il dit qu'il n'y a pas de troubles, moi je pense qu'il y a des troubles environnementaux et je pense que c'est assez évident. Je veux dire, écoute, j'ai jamais été me promener à l'entour de la planète. Apparemment, les déserts grossissent. T'sais? L'agriculture, comme on la connaît, qui est basée sur la technologie, ne livre pas la marchandise.
Ben, je sais pas, le lien avec le désert, je pense pas qu'il y a lien avec le désert, mais...
Oui, il y en a un.
Ben non, c'est parce qu'on a justement pas... On n'a pas passé le stade d'utiliser les forêts autour du désert. On est en train de... Quand vous regardez le Sahara,
hein?
Pourquoi le Sahara est en train d'augmenter en sa grandeur?
La superficie. Ouais.
C'est que, justement, ben, les gens qui sont là, ben, on a décidé de les garder à ce stade. On a décidé, ben, on va pas vous donner de l'électricité, on va pas vous donner de soins de santé, on va pas vous donner de route, on va pas vous donner quoi que ce soit. On va vous garder là. Nous, ce qu'on veut, c'est vos ressources naturelles. On veut vos mines d'or, diamants.
Ouais, c'est
on va vous garder là,
c'est
pas un gros problème.
Je disais, moi, ce qui m'a accroché, c'est quand il a parlé de fasciste. Tu sais,
ouais,
je suis d'accord pour dire que c'est
mesure,
très, très, très fasciste.
Et maintenant, puis, c'est ça la question de l'être humain. Est-ce qu'on va garder des gens à ce stade-là? Est-ce qu'on va les forcer à rester à ce stade de développement-là? Parce que je suis sûr que si on regardait dans le passé, je suis sûr que les Africains, il y avait sûrement plus de développement que ce qu'on voit en ce moment.
Oui, depuis qu'on est venu les aider.
Le mm-hmm. Oui, c'est ça la question de l'Empire et du fascisme aujourd'hui. Parce que
mm-hmm.
si okay, on veut un bon standard de vie pour nous-mêmes, avec la, on va pas relier la technologie qu'on a en ce moment. Si on veut le même standard de vie pour les autres, c'est pour leur procurer, pour les aider à arriver à ce niveau-là. Et c'est ça que dans les dernières 50 années, on a pas fait. Autant,
ouais,
que ça fait longtemps qu'il manque pour l'énergie.
Avec la recette qu'on applique aujourd'hui, d'accord avec le monsieur là.
Oui, mais on est dans la mondialisation. Ça marche pas.
Dans la mondialisation.
C'est sûr que de la manière qu'on voit la chose en ce moment, comment ça a été gagné dans les dernières 30-40 années, ça ne marche pas. On n'arrivera jamais à vraiment se développer ou avoir des choses environnementalement
viables,
ouais, si on continue dans le même système. Ça, je suis totalement d'accord. C'est justement comment on se débat de ce système. C'est là que la bataille se de remettre en question, genre, même les études qu'on nous a montrées dans le système d'éducation actuelle, ça peut être important.
Je pense qu'ils sont en train de couler le système d'éducation actuelle pour justement avoir plus d'idiots. C'est facile d'endormir quelqu'un que moins tu as d'éducation, plus c'est facile d'endormir.
Ouais, c'est ça. Mais ça n'a pas commencé hier.
Non, effectivement.
J'ai une question pour ceux qui disaient, je ne peux plus revenir, comme vous avez des méthodes scientifiques, je ne sais pas si j'ai besoin de savoir c'est quoi votre point là-dessus. Pourquoi qu'on parle, c'est pas deux fois que vous avez eu des arguments seulement en disant, c'est quoi tes méthodes scientifiques, je ne sais pas combien de recherches, j'en ai aucune idée quelle méthode vous utilisez, je veux savoir pourquoi vous dites ça.
Moi je veux juste amener un point avec. On a écrit un tract, on est allé voir. Mais David Suzuki, il était à l'Université d'Ottawa récemment. Il a fait un track où justement, l'idée, c'était pas juste d'attaquer David Suzuki. Non. Si tu lis les livres de David Suzuki, tu vas avoir une meilleure idée de ce qu'il pense de l'être humain en général. Mais c'est pas ça le point en tant que tel. C'est l'idée de voir, ben, est-ce que c'est vraiment juste lui? Ou en plus, mais d'où ça vient, cette manière de penser-là? Seul à penser comme ça, puis dans l'histoire, est-ce qu'on peut retracer en fait sa manière de penser scientifique, si on peut appeler ça scientifique, dans l'histoire. Puis l'idée, c'est d'aller jusqu'à. Moi, j'ai en tout cas, on a remonté jusqu'à Thomas Malthus. Je sais pas si tu connais.
Bon, j'en vois, c'est le gars qui parlait de la population.
Donc, tous les concepts qu'on voit avec justement les ressources aujourd'hui, c'est tiré de là. Maintenant, est-ce que le gars avait raison?
Ouais,
Il a raison dans le sens que je vais lui donner raison que les ressources, comme je vais lui donner raison que les ressources, on est en train de les utiliser, qu'on n'est pas en train de les renouveler. Fait qu'à un moment donné, oui, tu peux faire des calculs. Si on ne se met pas à en créer d'autres, ou si on ne se met pas à penser à ce qu'on est humain, c'est
Ouais, mais parce que c'est nous autres qui avons les ressources. Il va y avoir des problèmes à savoir là-dessus.
Pas juste ça, la quantité de nourriture qu'on jette, c'est assez impressionnant.
Ouais, c'est
parce qu'on réduit assez pour nourrir toute la planète deux fois.
Ben, si nous, on réduit, on donne à l'Afrique.
Alors, regarde, on produit assez pour nourrir tout le monde deux fois. En ce moment, hein?
En fait, il y en a d'autres, j'ai 50%
Non, juste le système de quotas, justement, c'est impressionnant.
Ouais,
quand c'est
là, on est à la question de mondialisation. C'est parce que on est dans un. C'est qui a dicté cette loi-là qu'on doit ajouter la nourriture?
Ah, c'est la loi invisible du marché, ça a l'air. La main invisible du marché.
Bon, ben c'est ça. La loi, c'est Malthus. Ça vient de sa théorie. Ça vient des gens comme Adam Smith. Ça, c'est l'Empire britannique. C'est ce qui est contraint en France.
Les ressources disparaissent, puis qu'il y en a un méchant bien qui meurt parce que ça va déclencher des guerres avant que ça disparaisse. Ou bien que justement, on s'organise, on s'organise pour faire des boucles, pour diminuer soit la consommation, ben qu'on utilise de la technologie. Je pense que la grosse question, c'est de savoir si est-ce que la technologie va être prête avant que ça arrive, avant que le point limite arrive. Puis ça, il n'en reste pas pour longtemps. Hein. C'est ça la grosse question. Je suis d'accord que la technologie peut nous sauver, mais encore là, elle va-t-il être prête, elle va-t-il être safe, elle va-t-il nous exposer dans la face dans 100 ans, dans 200 ans? Il y a plein de questions sur le
bruit. C'est une question politique. Question de savoir comment toi tu veux changer la donne en ce moment pour que ça arrive.
Ben oui, je suis absolument d'accord avec ça. On s'entend parfaitement là-dessus. Là, que présentement, le système financier, tout ça ne marche pas beaucoup. Surtout que. On parle quand même d'une technologie qui est pas au point. C'est ça le problème. Le point n'est pas là. Bon, c'est comme si on va être
prêt. Si you can get on the street with us on Monday, then. That's the only answer.
But it's also working, like actually working on the science now at this point. And there are people that are working on this, you know. We're not the only ones. There are scientists out there that are doing the work. We actually have a whole crew that have been working in LaRouche's basement for like over a year, and if you include the last two crews, over 2 years on reliving some of the most fundamental discoveries in science made by men, so that we can understand the creative process needed to make these types of discoveries. Right? There's no other way. There's no magic solution. It's not going to, like, you know, the answers of how to develop fusion are not going to come to us in a dream. Right? We actually have to develop the ability to make these discoveries within our culture. Develop the culture, change, mold the culture into a Renaissance culture.
And what we have already, LaRouche was involved a lot in fusion research back in the 70s and 80s. In fact, he was the founder of a group called the Fusion Energy Foundation. And we had this massive organization internationally in the 80s. And they were expecting to have fusion and to be on Mars by the year 2000, back in 1980. Like the early 80s. One of us, we have an Australian youth movement also, and one of the members, I recall, a couple years ago asked him, how long before we'll have fusion? He said about a generation, 25 years. But right now, see, if we move over to nuclear power as a general or energy source with high-speed electrified trains, if we move into those types of fields, also then hydrogen-powered cars, because the biggest two issues confronting us are petroleum and water. Would you agree?
There's
mineral resources,
but
petroleum and water are really of the greatest significance. So if you move away from gas or petroleum as a source of energy for car, for transportation, and you move to more mass-based transportation, like what we're talking about with rail systems, and then at the same time you've got nuclear to desalinate seawater, because with the newer reactors now, what you can do is you, they're high-temperature gas-cooled reactors. Now, the gas, the name for them is a high-temperature gas-cooled reactor, which means that the reactor burns at a very high temperature, and that there's a gas, helium, is used to cool the reactor and transmit the heat from the reactor to the turbine. But now there's all kinds of excess heat which is created by this process. What you can do is you can couple your reactor with your desalination plant and use the heat to desalinate seawater at the same time as you produce energy. And you can situate these on the coasts and then think about the potential for Africa, for the Middle East. India is already starting to do this. In fact, Russia's developed floating nuclear reactors that you can move around and situate them off the coast to desalinate water.
And what's the value of the cell that produced? So, because I know that now Australia tried this. They were pushing the salt back into the sea.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to say that.
Was destroying everything in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem.
We can eat it.
What?
The salt, I mean, once you're starting to deal with the kinds of questions that we're dealing with the salt that's created, we'll find out ways to use that. I'm sure we'll be able to, we can salt fish, we can do lots of things. Increase table salt consumption. Because people will be eating better in Africa. They'll need salt. So.
Yeah, they'll have food
and
salt.
And sea salt. So, I mean, those are things. We always find ways to deal with those. These are more technical issues. What we're really looking at is how do you break the pessimism in the culture, where the tendency is not to say, yeah, we can do that. Like the generation that fought World War II and got out of the Depression, and even afterwards, the ones that think of the culture around Kennedy. So you think about that and then consider today. What that difference is, and that's really what we need to change.
I admit that it's a good maybe way to think, but it's the culture after the economic crash in the 30s that got us to where we are now.
So we're in the crash.
No, the crash,
we
crash first and then realize it's that.
Après la crise, attention, après la crise de 29, l'économie capitaliste est en danger. Je veux dire, il y avait réellement un besoin de repartir l'économie parce que le capitaliste, finalement, tu as le club de Kennedy. Le Kennedy a fait partie du lot. Il a fait partie d'un de ceux qui des petits groupes qui a profité énormément du crash de 29. Autrement dit, ça ressemble un petit peu à aujourd'hui, là, je veux dire.
Did somebody
want to
translate that for the
Boston? Yeah, what
do you say? I'm saying that in 29, capitalism was badly damaged. They needed to do something to restart the machine. It's a little bit why we got this New Deal stuff, too. Because people who created that crash were quite greedy.
Okay.
And the father of John F. Kennedy was part of it. You know, he benefited a lot. I think he had like a zero to his.
He was a whiskey bootlegger.
Huh?
He was a.
Yeah, but he also benefited a lot from the. Yeah, I know he was a whiskey bootlegger. He had lots of connections with the mafia, and that's how he got his son elected. But he really pissed off the mafia guy when he started to go after the mafia, you know?
Yeah, that's an awesome example. I'm glad you brought that up. But
what I really wanted to address was the inaccuracies in what you said, because you said that it was the culture, it was the culture of the 30s that got us out of the Great Depression. So the problem is that, like, what was your name?
Jean-Marc.
What's interesting about what Jean-Marc is saying is that, like, you have to have historical accuracy. You have to be accurate in what you're saying about history. You have to be specific about, you know, like, what was the intention of particular individuals. You can't just fudge it. You can't make it up. Like, you have to be accurate about these things. Like, Roosevelt came from a family which was in politics. You know, he came from a patrician family with connections in the financial world. And John F. Kennedy came out of the same kind of family unit. But what you have with those two individuals, which is different from what you had within the culture at large, is that they decided to reject their familial culture, their upbringing, and they rejected the culture around them, and they assumed a role of leadership and were visionaries. Both of them were complete visionaries, and they organized the rest of society to see what they saw. So it wasn't a situation in which the culture somehow, you know,
but
just,
no, no,
just
I
all
agree.
Worked
no,
out
no,
for the best.
No, no, honestly, capitalism was had like big problems because they had lots of manifestation. A lot of people were like really pissed off about how things were going out, what were turning out. But you know, I'm not saying that I don't give any credit to Roosevelt. You know, I know that he pissed off a lot of people. He made a lot of enemies with that thing. It really like blew like some guys like up to the roof. Like some people that are really against, you know, these people, they make me laugh. You know, they say we're against the state intervening with, you know, roads or whatever, you know. But when they want to do something, they ask the money.
What do you think? Because it doesn't seem to me, it's not clear to me that you really know what it was that Roosevelt did.
Yeah, you know.
Like what it was that was so good.
I have an idea. I know.
Like
he's the one who decided to give like money to the poor people, so they would like start having a life, start spending money, and it would like reactivate the economy. Basically, what he did is like he took the money that was from the rich and he distributed it to the poor, which is the exact opposite of what we're living today. Today, we take the money from the poor and we give it to the rich.
That's a very inaccurate and simplified picture of what actually happened, because that's not why what Roosevelt did worked. The reason that what Roosevelt did work was because he was applying the principles of the American system of political economy. Because he was something of a genius in political economy. It wasn't because he was like Robin Hood, or because he was doing something, or because he was doing something that, you know, appealed to common sense. He actually understood the American system, which is the United States, as a government, can create credit to give to the states for investment in business, productive enterprise. In other countries, you have central banks, right? Capitalism in Europe is different from capitalism in the United States. The United States government has a monopoly on the U.S. dollar.
Who?
But
the Federal Reserve is not federal.
No, it's unconstitutional. The Federal Reserve is
unconstitutional.
What Franklin Roosevelt did was he made the Federal Reserve function as a national bank, effectively. He reformed the Federal Reserve, and for a time, it functioned as a national bank. I mean, this is the point that LaRouche makes in a paper which is in mass circulation right now, Capitalism and Its Law, is that, you know, European capitalism is different from the American system of political economy. Because it's not not just about the rich giving to the poor. It's about eliminating divisions between rich and poor. It's about uplifting. It's about
how can you do that?
How can you do that? Well, it's been done.
You have to play with taxes.
Well,
the thing is,
like Roosevelt used mass education as well. He employed people to work on projects like the Tennessee Valley Authority. And then half the day he educated them on how to engineer it. So people who were working on the projects in 32 were engineering them by 1938. And he actually uplifted their ability to think and conceptualize about
if you give some money to the people because they pay taxes.
It wasn't about money.
It wasn't what?
It wasn't about money. He used the RFC.
I mean, if you want to start school, you need money. Usually, school takes money.
That's about
you need
credit.
To teach you too.
Huh?
You need something to learn.
you need to pay the teacher, you know. Otherwise, you have no teacher, you know.
Yeah, but my point is that Roosevelt
created. If you
want to
build a dam,
hold on, no.
You need
Roosevelt created
you need
a means
too.
In which to actually justify somebody getting an education.
Hmm? Sorry, I didn't.
Roosevelt created something to learn for. By making these projects. So first he had the project, then he had the educational system which integrated people into that project, and he had people teaching them who knew that they needed to create a culture around developing these projects.
I understand. But I mean, basically, you know,
it wasn't just about money,
though, that's my point. You could have taken that money and say, oh, poor rich guy, you pay too much taxes. Lower your tax because you simply have like one jumbo jet.
Is that your George Bush accent?
Go for two. What happened if this one breaks? You know, but basically doing this is giving money to the rich. When you're talking about lowering the tax, basically you're giving the money to the rich.
You can't solve this problem with tax policy only.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to start something, gotta get the money somewhere.
Yeah, well, governments can create that. That's think about it this way also, with what Roosevelt is doing. It's the difference between redistributing the wealth within an oligarchical system, like globalization or what you had at the time, which was a world dominated by the British Empire. Simply redistributing the wealth, taking a little bit more from the rich, giving a little bit more to the poor, and organizing yourself and your society to be the primary driver in overthrowing the imperial system. So the money can act, and this is really the central problem of all modern economics, is that we have been, and just the way we think about economy, we've been brainwashed in a way to look at economics always in terms of money. But that's the money is, in a sense, a shadow of an underlying process and an intention. Like, what Miles was saying about Roosevelt and how Roosevelt created money, or Canada, in fact, we have a central bank, but we own it. And there's not many countries, so we have a kind of a mix between the American system of banking and finance and what you have in Europe. And in fact, all of our banks, their charters, our whole Canadian banking system is premised upon Alexander Hamilton's National Bank. It's actually modeled upon this American banking system. So the idea is that our governments can create the credit that we need in order to finance the projects.
Yeah,
but it's the intention
like
that organizes the society.
But look, like in Iraq, okay? That's a freaking bundle, that war.
Uh-huh.
What the American did, they did print a lot of money. A lot. But now the problem is the US dollar is going down. You know?
Yeah, well,
so
it was meant to bankrupt
the
country.
You could print like crazy.
Yeah, it depends on what you're going to use it for, right?
Of course.
If you build projects, then
build
that's
tanks.
Gonna, yeah.
You don't learn a lot from that.
Yeah, well, because it's physical. You're thinking of physical wealth. Because a tank, if you're going to spend money to build something that you're going to blow up, it's not really a good long-term investment in the economy. Of course, but the Iraq War and all of these wars that the United States has been involved in have been designed to bankrupt the United States, to destroy it. And that's, but who benefits, right? These financier oligarchy in order to loot the United States. And that's what they do. But that's their method.
Where you got like the people.
But this is what Roosevelt.
Benefits a lot.
You know, Roosevelt told Churchill to his face at one of these summits. He said, "Winston, I am not fighting this war to save the British Empire. And when this war is over, we are going to build up the colonies with American system methods. We're going to help them industrialize. We're going to help them build infrastructure. And we're going to help train them so that they can run their own nations. And we are going to decolonize. We are not fighting this war to save the British Empire." And Churchill was freaking out.
Weren't doing it like the Canadian.
And there's this wonderful scene in a book that his son writes. You've got Churchill, Roosevelt's son is also there, and the Sheikh of Morocco. And
the Sheikh of Morocco? Sorry.
So these three are the king. So the king of Morocco and Roosevelt get into a discussion in French. And what they're talking about is how the U.S. is going to share technology with the Moroccans to help develop the economy, develop a modern industrial economy. And Churchill is being completely ignored through this whole discussion. And Roosevelt's son records is how Churchill's face went through a series of different hues of red, you know, from light pink all the way to an almost nuclear cherry red kind of thing about to explode, steam coming out the ears. Because Roosevelt represented everything that Churchill hated and feared about the United States. But there's another story where Roosevelt and Churchill both meeting the king of Saudi Arabia.
On the Queen Sebo.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, it might have been. Yeah, it might have been there.
For like 60 years of oil in 1945 that ended in 2005.
Well, the interesting thing about this story, because it's contrasting, and it gives you insight into who Roosevelt really was. Churchill meets the king. And he strolls in, and he's smoking, and he's drinking, or he offers a drink to the Ibn Saud, and Ibn Saud, I mean, this is just the wrong thing to do. Then he offers him a jet. You know, all these things, and he's trying to bribe him, and it's so obvious and crass. And this is just an old man, and he's crippled, not in very good shape, he's in a lot of pain. And he does not set a very, he does not show
good.
Very good. He does not impress the guy.
Make a good thing.
Roosevelt comes in and he wheels in on his wheelchair, and they start talking, and Ibn Saud's kind of, he's very curious about this contraption, so they get into a conversation about the wheelchair, and it's like, geez, you know what, what is this thing? And Roosevelt says, well, do you want to try it? You know, check it in. And so the king sits in this, and he's like, well, you know, he can move around, he's pretty mobile now. Roosevelt says, well, geez, look, I've got another one of these, and I think he gets it brought in. He has it brought in. So they're both sitting there in these wheelchairs. And he says, well, look, why don't you keep the wheelchair? And that one tiny act of generosity seals the relationship between the Saudis and the United States for the next 60 years. But the point is...
With the Saudis?
Yeah, with the Saudis. Now, of course, you can say, well, look at what happened since then, but...
Yeah, yeah, but I've heard a story about the
yeah,
the seal. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's many stories about the South.
Yeah,
45
plus... But
the thing is...
Well, think about
what does
it
say?
They were supposed to solve the Palestinian problem.
Well, yeah,
this is
the idea of what was that indicative of at that time.
But the thing is, what is the point of the story, right? What is the point of the story? Who is this guy, Roosevelt? and why was it not just about redistributing money? And that's where you have to address personality and the intention and what a real leader is and what it means to be a great human being and what's so lacking in our leaders today. Right. So when you look at the New Deal, Roosevelt wrote, I think in 35, 36 maybe, he wrote a short piece on the New Deal, and it was around the time of his second election. And he said that the New Deal had been explicitly premised upon the preamble of the Constitution. That it wasn't about, it was about something much more profound than just some Keynesian idea of redistributing monetary wealth. It's about a transformative process and about increasing the power of your own population to produce, to survive, to reproduce themselves in the future. And that's really what's driving it. And that's what's driving what we need to do now.
Is that a good thing? Or
it's a very good thing.
Okay.
Save the world.
Okay.
You can look at the specifics
of
it, but
that's
it was in itself a rejection of imperialism. Because you want to look at will money obey a certain law or just some arbitrary rule in society? Like, is it going to respect men or is it going to just be something like we have today? Or like free markets.
Sorry, I'm toast. I don't have a nuclear point.
You should check this out. You can probably read it.
That sounds great.
Save your salt.
Presidential primary.
Sorry.
No, not at all.
These
are the kind of discussions that we try to have these all the time on the street. A lot of the questions about how.
Try to quit.
It's a good sense.
It's everywhere. It's already everywhere. I don't even know.
How do you do it? You don't take sugar and coffee? You don't take sugar?
No, I just have better coffee. Less sugar.
On a mop?
Yes.
Well. Not quick sugar.
Less. Well, obviously, everything. Cereal. Or like. Because I work at an hotel, and I get a lot of
working out.
I do stretching
exercise.
All the way.
Yeah,
we're having a discussion.
Yeah.
It used to get like right now.